Thanks for waking up with WKOK Sunrise on News Radio 1070 WKOK and WKOK.com.
And thank you so much for joining us on WKOK Sunrise. Rob Center, our fabulous producer, fabulouser by the day, so we always appreciate his help and hard work. We have on the news line with us now our rock star of infectious disease specialists. Always fabulous answers to maybe some of the subtle questions, and we're always very grateful for his call. And Dr. Rutul Dalal is on the line. He's the medical director of infectious diseases at UPMC Susquehanna. So thank you so much for calling in again and again, Doctor. We're glad to hear from you.
Sir, thanks for having me again.
Oh, good morning. Masking is one of the big debates that is happening right now. You've talked about this in the past, so some of this is going to be reiterated. But give us your pitch on the idea that wearing masks can help tamp down the pandemic in our area.
Yep, that is really hotly debated right now. So, yes, as you said correctly, masking definitely helps you from giving your secretions to others. For example, if you do have the COVID-19 or any other respiratory infections, for that matter, to prevent you from giving it to others. But it also prevents you from getting something from others, too. Although this has not been really pushed forward that much, but it has definitely proved during the past epidemics of SARS and MERS or swine flu. There were studies from Hong Kong which said that if you do wear a mask, it also gives you around 50 to 60% protection from other respiratory viral infections as well. And, you know, there are a lot of myths about it. Oh, my goodness, you can't breathe. It's difficult to really bring your oxygen into your blood. But there was a study done in which a person wore it for 8 hours straight and had a pulse oximeter on its fingertip, and the oxygen saturation did not drop down below 99%. So you do feel suffocated. Actually, that's a good thing, that the mask is doing what it's supposed to do. But no, it is not really hindering your breathing. And you are definitely getting the oxygen.
Well, let's dig in a little bit more, this idea that I get some selfish protection from it. Maybe I should have done that in the first place. Just say, well, forget, you know, the fact that I'm protecting others if I might have it. There is ample evidence that a mask protects you from inhaling droplets that might have been left by somebody else.
Oh, yes, most definitely, and especially larger droplets, like, you know, when somebody is talking to you and somebody gets out into a bout of cough, or even when just talking, larger droplets do fly around when people are talking, and that would definitely prevent you from getting in or inhaling them so that you don't fall sick. And this is true not only for the COVID-19, it's also going to be protective against flu or any other respiratory viral infections which we might get during the fall or the winter season.
And if there were a myth about masking, it would be that it eliminates COVID-19. Doesn't prevent you from getting it at all whatsoever. You still have, your eyes are exposed. And
exactly.
Tell me about that, this idea that you can still get it.
Yeah, you can still get it, especially if you're very close to somebody when that person is talking, laughing, or sneezing, or coughing, because it can get through even other areas, as you said correctly, about the eyes, you know, because they are also mucous membranes, and things can enter through that as well. So if you are one of those lucky ones who's wearing glasses, or probably right now wearing some cool shades in the summer months, that will also give you an added protection. So some people do as well say that, you know, even if you can't, if you're not wearing any eyewear, you can still wear some disposable eyewear in addition to the mask, which will give you more protection than masking alone.
We see some individuals using face shields that doesn't cover all of their entire mouth and nose. Your thoughts on this idea that face shields may be as a substitute?
Well, you know, I would say something is better than nothing. So I would still go on and say that, okay, wearing face shields also is good enough. It doesn't give you that much protection as what a mask would do. But studies from, for example, from Johns Hopkins said that, when you are wearing a face shield, which is tight at the forehead and it's open from down below, the droplets do fall down But it's very difficult for droplets to come from beneath your facial into your mouth and to your nose. So I would say it would still give you protection, probably 15 to 20% less than a mask. But I would say if people are claustrophobic, people don't feel right about wearing a mask, at least wear a face shield.
Okay, so you have something. And again, is that the idea that its primary purpose is to protect other people and provides a little protection for you? Is that sort of the same dynamic?
It is. It is. And like again, like you know, even if it protects you, and it is not really. It protects you by around 55 to 60%. So that's a good number. And I think I would be comfortable to live with that. So it doesn't even protect others, but it also protects you to a greater extent than what was initially thought.
What about going back to school this fall? We are talking about in-person classes on campus with every age, K through 12, and the colleges around here, and as much as we can, social distancing and masking. Your observations about that?
Yeah, exactly. And it is possible. Schools in France and Italy have done that. And me with my other infection control partners are in contact with the area colleges, universities, as well as school districts. And we are trying to come up with a plan and guiding them into how safely they can reopen. But of course, primarily, it's driven by the Department of Ed, which is the Department of Education, as well as the Department of Health. And in sync with these two other local entities, we are trying to provide our two cents at UPMC and giving them ideas, especially from the infection prevention standpoint, about how to safely do that. Of course, one should obviously be cautiously optimistic, but it has been done before with, like, you know, with a staggered approach, less attendance, spacing out the students, as well as by wearing protection. And that's where probably masking and face shielding both together in combination with hand hygiene and, of course, social distancing would go a long way in having a safe entry back into the school system or the college system.
And are you monitoring and have a reaction to the discussion that it is so much better to have students in school learning in front of a teacher and having this, you know, communal experience, that outweighs what are some, hopefully mitigated risks from getting coronavirus at school?
Well, yes, and it is definitely very much important for a professional all-round development of a kid, is the communal experience. It makes us get into the team spirit thing and also makes you better individuals. But one should not forget that, you know, if there is, God forbid, even a small little or local outbreak, one should be ready to again fall back and then again pause for a bit. I wouldn't say that, you know, once you start it, look, okay, it cannot be stopped. It's not like a freight train which is cruising around 80 miles per hour. It's not going to stop. But I think we should try to open it up. There are measures being taken. School superintendents, also with the college and the other university professors and presidents, are working diligently to try to make this as safe as possible. So I would say, yes, we should do it. But again, just be careful. And, of course, everybody has got a part to do into doing this, including the parents and the students.
And are there immunity advantages if you have all kids together? If you have them in groups, they're giving each other these, you know, little viruses and so on. Hopefully nothing like COVID-19. So developing immunities is something that should continue and would be advantageous?
Yeah, I would say so, definitely. But in sync also with vaccines, I would still put forward that, you know, the recommended vaccine should be given to the kids by their parents. And, of course, being together, of course, will make you a little bit sick. And we're not talking about COVID, but for other respiratory infections. But that also eventually builds up your immunity as you grow up. And that is part of our growing, and all of us as kids have been through it. And that makes our immunity, it teaches our immunity how to attack and how to protect oneself as you grow older. So, yes, that is all a part of the general well-being of a person.
Pretty soon, football teams will be practicing and other fall sports, track and field, and field hockey will start their work. You're comfortable with masking and distancing fall sports? Can at least start up?
Yes, because our multidisciplinary team of clinicians and researchers led by UPMC Sports Medicine has developed guidelines to assist coaches, athletic trainers, organizers in creating a safe environment for youth, high school, and even college athletes, especially as they consider to return to play amid COVID-19, including fans and staff members. So obviously, we have made recommendations in several categories for resuming athletic programs, including pre-participation physicals, social distancing, equipment sanitization, PPEs, of course, practice and competition tactics, and illness protocols. But again, these are subject to change as the medical and scientific communities learn more about COVID-19. But we also think that, it is just a supplement to the directions provided by, of course, the CDC or by the state government. So there have been recommendations given in sync with our infectious disease partners, orthopedic surgeons, as well as our trauma specialists as well.
When we see the UPMC trainers out in the field at the schools and ready to resume their work, so they'll be delivering that message to the schools and, of course, helping to monitor it. And when the fall sports practices begin, if they haven't already, they'll be there to offer those insights. Dr. Rachel Levine answered this a little bit yesterday, but the current strain of coronavirus that's prevalent in Pennsylvania, is it different than the one from 3 months ago? Is it more contagious, less contagious, more severe, less severe, more deadly, less severe? Can you say that it's evolved in those kind of ways?
Yes, it is. And, absolutely. Basically, all viruses go through a phase called self-preservation. See, the virus wants to live and propagate. If it attacks somebody and the person dies, then, of course, the virus dies itself. It wants to keep propagating among people and stay in the community for as long as possible. So what happens is, this is still a work in progress. There's a lot of things which keep happening on a daily manner. So we have these knobby structures called the spike proteins are just outside the virus. So it has changed a certain amount of protein sequence on it, so which makes it a little bit more easily transmissible, as well as it is becoming a little bit less lethal than before. But again, this is just preliminary chat right now going on through the observations being happening all across the country, as we have been fortunate to see less hospitalizations comparatively to our southern counterparts, less amount of deaths as well. Of course, that doesn't mean that the numbers are going down, because of course the numbers go up, because as I said earlier, probably the transmission is going up as well. So it has slightly come down in the rates of hospitalizations and deaths, particularly in our north central communities of Pennsylvania. But that doesn't mean that the fear or probably the virus is gone. It can again change back in a few months and come back again with the roaring vengeance. But certain studies have shown that there has been a change in the way the virus is trying to contain or stay itself in the communities. So yes, you're right. Hospitalizations and deaths, especially in North Central Pennsylvania, have gone down slightly.
We're just about out of time. I'll open up the mic. There's more to cover, so we'll have to place that on another interview. But please, an open mic, add anything to our interview you'd like to add that you think is important now.
Well, I'm saying, it's been almost 4 months since we are battling this, and we have achieved quite a bit of success, luckily, especially in our area of the state of Pennsylvania. And we are lucky compared to the southern states. And whatever we did, whatever we clamped down, we and then opened up in a phased manner, And now we're asking people to mask. I think please adhere to that, because we don't want to fall back again into from where we began. Our economies will suffer, our mental health will suffer, as well as our physical well-being will suffer, because we have such a beautiful weather outside here. So let's not let all the hard work go undermined by certain actions of us and putting us back onto the back foot. So I guess please continue hand hygiene, act responsibly, social distancing, as well as, like, you know, using some basic common sense to protect you, your family, and our communities. And we'll go a long way.
Well, thank you so much for your information and your assistance and all your regular comments.